Malibu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oktoberfest 2014, held at the Breakside Brewery on October 4th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Oktoberfest will be celebrated with limited-release Birkin-conditioned beers, live music, and family-friendly games, and a human foosball tournament. Join the Breakside Brewery and other Inner Southeast Portland businesses and community members to celebrate this year's harvest season and Portland-made craft beer. That's Oktoberfest, Saturday, October 4th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Breakside Brewery, 930 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in Wednesdays for an afternoon of jazz. Hosts of Jazz Lives, A Jazz World, and Jazz in the Afternoon play the very best in jazz music. From the historical to the present, and jazz of all stripes. Swinging, smoking, bluesy, funky, new and old, but all good. That's Wednesday afternoons from noon to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And this is KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's time now for Political Perspectives. Today, the guests are grassroots women activists from the U.S., Nigeria, and Tibet. They will talk about their vision for change and the work they do on the ground to dismantle oppression, empower women, and shift the paradigm. The hosts are Delphine Crescenzo and Leanne Kranz. At 10 o'clock, we got Eric Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints. And at 11 o'clock, we've got the Recovery Zone with a biologist, Mr. Haskell, who discusses his book, The Forest Unseen, A Year's Watch in Nature. 11:30, we speak with Roberta S. Hunt, Marilyn Keller, and Skeeter Green about My Walk Has Never Been Average, Stories of Black Tradeswomen, a multimedia presentation based on the lives of women whose stories are rarely told. And once again, thank you so much for all you KBOO members for your great support. If you're not a current member, you can become one very easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says Donate Today. And now we're going to go right to our hosts for Political Perspectives, Delphine Crescenzo and Leanne Kranz. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you so much, Tammy. Welcome to the special program. Usually you tune in to Kathleen Stevenson, but today on KBOO, we bring you a special program about the work of three incredible grassroots women activists that are on the Walpole's live tour, and we'll tell you all about that event in just a minute. I'm Delphine Crescenzo.
And I'm Leanne Kranz. This morning in the studio, we are honored to have with us three grassroots women activists. Inanna Shahudi from the Bronx, New York, USA. Olenike Olagboji from Nigeria. And Jamba from Tibet. Here for an exclusive discussion about their vision for change and the work they do on the ground to dismantle oppression, empower women, and shift the paradigm. Inanna, Olenike, and Jamba are on the World Pulse Live 2014 tour and will be speaking tomorrow night, Thursday, at the World Trade Center in downtown Portland, 7 p.m. World Pulse is a Portland-based nonprofit that, quote, connects women through digital technology to bring women's voices out of the shadows and onto the world stage.
Let me tell you a little bit more about our guests. So we have Jampa, who is a voice for girls' education. She was born in a small village in the Tibetan Plateau. She is a poet, a rising community leader, the only person from her village to attend a university. She's improved the lives of 100 through small solar and literacy development projects. Jampa is committed to giving voice to the invisible women of Tibet and empowering young girls to pursue their dreams.
Olenike is a voice for women and climate change. Olenike hails from the beautiful and resource-abundant country of Nigeria, yet she has witnessed the environmental exploitation of her beloved homeland and mobilizes grassroots women to take charge as they have been the most impacted. She believes that the only way to ensure the environmental security of Nigeria is to make sure that women have equal voice in these decisions.
And finally, we're joined by Inanna Chihudi, who is a voice for maternal health. Born and raised in the Bronx, New York, Inanna is an Afro-Dominicana midwife and writer. She raises awareness about maternal and infant health for women in the United States, the country with the worst maternal death rate among industrialized nations. In particular, she is dedicated to radically changing the conditions under which women of color are giving birth in the U.S. healthcare system. Welcome to the three of you, to KBU. Wonderful to have you here with us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
I'd love if you can take a minute to really share with us your vision for the work that you do in your community. And maybe, Olanike, we can start with you.
Thank you. I envision women's representation and leadership in the natural resource sector. Because over the years, I've come to realize that women's voices are not heard. They have very little say or no say at all when it comes to access and control over natural resources. Mm. So I started out doing everything environment until I came to this realization. And so I founded the Women's Initiative for Sustainable Environment in 2009. And on the platform of this organization, I mobilize women, create awareness, sensitize them about current environmental issues because they are close to nature, especially the women in the rural areas, the indigenous women, but yet when it comes to decision making in their communities, they are not recognized. So through awareness creation, most of these women are beginning to come to a realization that they can share their solutions and also find solutions to some of the challenges they have in the in their communities. So women are now rising up and, you know, taking charge of some of this situation they find themselves in.
And Olanike, we're going to talk, you know, in a little bit more in detail about the ways that women are more affected by climate change. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Jamba, I would love to hear about your vision and the work that you do.
Oh, well, since I'm the first university student in my community, I have a very strong sense of obligation to work and help women and girls in my community. So today I have done a small-scale development project such as solar flashlight, solar panel, clothing, secondhand clothing, and a literacy project that benefited hundreds of people in my community. And I also see more girls and their children at school today, and the people believe that women or girl can do something that is beneficial to all. And I believe that my work and my effort got recognized, and people started paying more attention to education, girls' education. And so I see myself as a part of contribution to women and girls' education in my community. So my vision is to establish a vibrant learning space to educate women and girls, and to help and encourage them to find their own potentials. It's a further matter, I really want to train women and girls to use computer and access to the internet to have their voice heard, and so that they could have more opportunities for education, scholarship, for jobs, or for a better life. So through all this, I want to inspire women and girls to dare to use the creative power of their minds. Thank you.
Wow, well said. Inanna, how about you?
Well, I do focus a lot about on maternal health as a midwife. That is where my heart is. But and maternal health is a big is bigger is part of a bigger umbrella of reproductive health. And so in the United States, women of color suffer inequities in the healthcare system that are quite frankly detrimental to their health. And so my vision is to help women have a healthier outcomes in their lifespan. So my vision first for like the first preliminary things I would like to do is to build a sex ed curriculum to be able to teach middle school, high school, and college aged women about their bodies, and not just basic sex ed that we're used to, but coming from a very like standing in your power and self-esteem and why you are worthy of receiving these services. And further than that, I'd like to create a website that can connect women and they can have access to information in one place and have access to webinars. And just as I develop this website, then in an actual establishment sense, I would like to have my own birth clinic in New Jersey, because in New York I can't do that at the moment, but have women from North Jersey, South Bronx, and all different low-income communities in that area to be able to be able to birth outside of a hospital, and also have a wellness center where it can become a hub of different well-woman counseling, workshops, community building. And that's just on that level. Politically, I want to change policy around Medicaid and access to healthcare.
Mm-hmm. That's just a very small vision here, Inanna. All of you, in fact.
So I'm wondering if you could share what it's like to be born a girl in your community. What are some of the major challenges that they face, and what do you feel that they need to become empowered?
Who's going first? Jampa?
Jampa. Well, growing up in a very small village in Tibet, we don't have a lot of resources, and people have a very low expectation for education. So we also have cultural restraints and socially constructed beliefs that women and girls are supposed to be at home doing house chores, herding livestock, or collecting yak dungs. So I have like obstacles for facing to break these cultural beliefs, not necessarily just diminish, but kind of promoting or having the people change the perspective and change the perceptions of getting education, and let them believe that girls' education can bring about positive changes in the community. So I believe that educating women and girls and having them equipped with the skills of, for example, ICT skills, can return as a very great investment for a better, healthier, strong communities and the families. So as a girl, I don't have a very supportive community around for getting higher education. I remember my neighbors and my relatives used to say that sending me to a school is kind of wasting time. So usually it's very difficult to grow in that kind of environment that you don't have a strong support, and but you still have that confidence and have your visions to go forward. So that's very challenging in both ways. So I think girls and women in my community need a very strong support, and also the resources to, for example, we're talking about the technology, digital technology, we need a very accessible programs or internet center, training center for women and girls to train them and to help them learn and to have their voice heard in a way that a very effective way. So I think that's very important, and
thank you. Inanna, would you like to go next?
Well, I grew up in the South Bronx. The South Bronx is the poorest congressional district of the nation. So we have to talk about poverty and what that does to communities and what are the social ills that come from poverty. So growing up in my community, we have, you know, not the best access to public assistance and the struggles that come with that. And then we have young girls who fall prey to men, you know, in this patriarchal, misogynistic society. So we, growing up, I didn't have access to information about my reproductive health, whether it was by taboo or whether it was just it didn't exist. So there is I don't know what the numbers are exactly now, but there is a prevalence of teen pregnancy and STDs and just no knowledge really or information or guidance from our healthcare professionals or from our hospitals for women. And further than that, like I said, poverty expounds the social ills. So then our facilities that we do have access to are subpar. So growing up was a very confusing time for me as a girl because I didn't get a thorough explanation about my sexual health. And a lot of women in my community either learn the hard way or continue to be traumatized and lead unhealthy lives because we just don't have the information or we lack the resources.
Thank you. Olenike, would you like to share?
I grew up in the city, but as a child, I had an opportunity about age 5. I had an opportunity to travel to the village because cities in Nigeria, the people who live in the cities are more enlightened, informed, but those who still find themselves in the rural areas are still limited by sociocultural, religious barriers, which downplay the important roles that women can play in decision-making in communities. At that young age, I saw women in rural areas, barefoot women and girls carrying heavy containers of water on their heads, and they had to walk over long distances, you know, to source for this water, sometimes under the scorching sun. And thinking back, for me in the city, all I needed to do was, you know, put on the tap to get myself water. Mm-hmm. At that young age, I realized that there was disparity. And also growing up and seeing the disparity between, you know, what happens to women in the rural areas and what we have in the cities, I found out that most of these women would rather be seen than heard in my communication since I started my work. You find out that these women do all the household chores, go walk long distances to source for water from contaminated sources. Some of them are not even aware of the dangers that is for them and their families. And then these women are limited in terms of their financial power because they spend most of their time, you know, sourcing for either fuel, wood, water, or they spend time on the farms they don't own, because also there are issues around land title. You know, women don't own the lands, but they do all the work. These are cultural barriers, you know, that also limits women. And that also creates a kind of situation where you find out that women are the poorest in these communities. So there are so many social, cultural practices that undermine what women can do in their communities.
When my grandmother was born, my hero, my grandmother, she was told by her own mother that she cried because she gave birth to a girl. And my birth wasn't welcomed in that way, but the messages we get in this culture are much more underground, but we sure get them still, and there are lots of the disparity. We face some of those disparities you all mentioned here. It's just a little more hidden, I guess.
Yeah, for some reason also my family thought that I should be a guy. Only my mom was very hopeful that I would be a girl and was so happy when I was a girl. She was like, no, she's a girl. Sicilian families, you know. Well, you're listening to KBOO Special. We are very honored to have on KBOO today Olanike, Jampa, and Inanna, who are going to be speaking, if you are interested, live. This is a live show, but they're going to be tomorrow night, Thursday, at the World Trade Center in downtown Portland, 7 to 9 o'clock. This is a World Post Live 2014 event. These ladies have been on a tour to New York. They're now in Portland, and they're going to go to San Francisco next, sharing their messages. So this is your opportunity here in Portland to see them tomorrow night. We're going to take a short musical break, and we're going to listen to a song selected by Jampa, which is Prayer of the Heart. Jampa says that this is a song that talks about people, culture, and how closely Tibetan people are bounding together, speaking solidarity, praying of happiness, blessings that people should receive in life. So let's go to that song.
KBOO Special this morning. I'm Leanne Kranz here with my co-host Delphine Crescenzo, having a conversation with our honored guests, three grassroots women leaders, speaking at the World Pulse live event tomorrow evening, 7 to 9 at the World Trade Center. With us in the studio, Inanna Jehudi, a maternal health advocate from the Bronx, New York. Olanike Olegboji, here from Nigeria, talking about the environmental issues that are impacting her country and the women and girls there. And Jampa from Tibet, who is an advocate for girls' education. And she chose the song we just listened to, Prayer of the Heart. So may I ask you, what first inspired you in this work? Inanna?
Well, I think my own healing journey and learning about my body, I realized that as you heal, you start to realize what are your gifts. And the more space you create in your mind, that's your mission or like your destiny to come through. So really the healing and the health and like the happiness and joy that I was able to tap into by learning about my body and healing from trauma inspired me to pay attention and to educate other women and help other women who were also like releasing these shackles and really getting to know their bodies. And then I just graduated on Sunday from midwifery school, my first year from midwifery school.
Congratulations.
And I've caught 36 babies in 365 days. So I think the gravity of like what is at stake, especially that I've caught little girls and I've caught little boys, understanding that this is it. This is our new generation coming through. Like, what are we going to do so we don't pass on this legacy? anymore. So my inspiration is knowing that my healing is intrinsically tied to the health of other women, and also knowing that there's a world that my future children and everyone's future children sitting in this room, or grandchildren or nieces or nephews, we're about to hand this world over. What kind of world are we trying to hand back to them, and what are they going to inherit?
Mm-hmm. Olenike, what inspired you?
As a child, I've always had this pull towards the environment. I had this consciousness and love for nature. And as I grew up and saw that people did not have a similar understanding, the kind of understanding I had, the kind of appreciation I had for the environment. So I grew up with this optimism in me that someday I'll be able to teach and influence people to live in harmony with nature. And then, you know, some of the disparities I saw, I wanted to create change. I wanted to see a balance. I stand for equity. I stand for justice. And that is what I think our world needs.
Thank you. Jamba.
Well, I had never taken for my my opportunity of education for granted, because I know what exactly like otherwise. And so I after doing all these small skilled development project, I received very positive reactions from my community. And then I see, you know, men and women came over to me and asked me, how did you do all these things? Because no one has ever done all great things to community. And we have many business men, and those men has never done those kind of thing. And men are very, very impressed. And so they believed also, they studied the value girls' education at that time. And I see very positive and progress and changing these perceptions gradually. And I was so motivated. That is exactly what really it is to motivate me and strengthen my beliefs in my visions to help and to encourage girls and women to have the education opportunity as I do. So, yeah.
I think this is so interesting, right? Like, I think very often we seem to forget the potential that we are losing, the genius that we are losing by, you know, discarding, you know, women and not wanting to invest in their education.
And I would like to add that, you know, in my community, men received as a breadwinners, and but not girls. Even great things if can be done to community, that should be a man or boy. So girl has never thought of doing something great that is contribution beneficial to all. So I see these positive reactions and feedback from men and women in my community. So that motivated me to and inspired me my own self to keep doing great things and. Yeah, and also help women and girls in my community.
I'd like for us to start, you know, delving a little deeper in all of the different issues that you guys are taking on. And I'd love to start with you, Inanna. If you could paint for us a picture really about the current reproductive health system for women in this country, and then how that impacts women of color, right? And some of the strategies that you are hoping to put forth, you know, to help with those.
In this country right now, women have to constantly fight for their choice and their ability to make their own decisions on their body. We have politicians nationwide making laws about abortion, about contraception, about anything and everything.
Man politicians, right?
Male politicians and some patriarchal
and some women.
And that does exist. And so in reproductive health, specifically maternity health, we also have a lot of women being coerced. We have a lot of women being cut open, having unnecessary interventions done on their bodies, and blocking that natural flow of birth and reproductive health. And furthermore, because we do not value the work of women in this country, and we don't value their role as mothers and as the foundation of society, we're not giving enough maternal leave, mm-hmm. and space for women to heal and postpartum support, and we don't have any of that. And so right now, 1 in 7 women, white women, die in childbirth. 1 in 4 women of color die in childbirth. And women of color have the highest rate of preterm births. Infant mortality is double for women of color. And so this is the situation that I am dealing with at the moment. And a lot of it has to do with racism. A lot of racism in this country is very overt and covert at the same time. It's very blatant and it's not. So in the healthcare system has a legacy of institutionalized racism that harms white black women. So some of the strategies that I envision are to have not just black healthcare professionals, but black healthcare professionals who have a sense of social justice, who understand the bigger picture, understand that when you step into a examination room with someone that looks like you and talks like you and understands your culture, you feel more comfortable if that person makes that space comfortable to really tell them what you need, and someone who's actually looking out for your best interest and not trying to make a buck off of you or dismiss you. So that's one thing. And also the improving our facilities, our healthcare facilities, letting us run our own healthcare facilities like I would like to do, and also Medicaid. There's a lot of, from what I've seen politically, conservatives are not big fans of public assistance. Mm-hmm. They see black people as though we are lazy, which if you consider black people lazy and you brought millions of people over the Atlantic just to do your work, I don't want to talk about who's being lazy. That's first and foremost. So
I wish people could have seen your face when you said that.
So lazy and like trying to like benefit from the system, but this very system actually has many reparations that they need to pay forth, particularly in public assistance and healthcare. And so expanding access to Medicaid, to healthcare, so that women can not only go to the hospitals in my communities, but be able to go to professionals that are actually going to listen to them is crucial. Mm-hmm. And also with the education that is happening in our systems and lifting the taboo. Like, I understand that we live in a very we say separation of church and state, but there are very Christian values that run this country, and I respect people's beliefs, but not teaching a woman about her body, you're putting her in danger. This is not a conversation about ideology. This is just a simple fact that you have a daughter, you send her out into the world that is trying to kill her, mm-hmm. without any knowledge of how to protect herself, what to look for, and how to take care of herself. And so this sexual education is paramount to all the other things that I've been talking about, strategy. Mm-hmm.
And Olenike, can you please talk about how women really bear the brunt of the environmental issues that we're facing across the globe? They're the most impacted, the most vulnerable. Can you talk about some of the reasons why and why it's so important that they take a leadership role in making decisions and implementing solutions?
Yeah, I've always believed that women are the closest to nature. And then when we talk about the issues of sustainable development, we say it is meeting the needs of today's generation without compromising the ability of the next generation to meet their own needs. Mm-hmm. And yet we find out that the same women who are birthing bringing the next generation of people into the world, mm-hmm. do not have a say. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes, they are not supported when it comes to the issue of sustainable development, which we are preaching. To give specific examples, like there's an ethnic group known as the Gbagi people in Nigeria. The women livelihoods are tied to forest resources, and in the face of the degradation, you know, there's high speed of degradation going on in Nigeria. And most of these people are sometimes even barred from going to, they've always had a sustainable way of making sure that the forest, you know, is not degraded. Mm-hmm. But you find out that big corporations are giving licenses to go into forest and, you know, collect a whole lot of log. There's a whole lot of logging going on and all that. And it's depriving, you know, this indigenous people a sustained means of livelihood. You find out now that most of these women, in the face of degradation, they have to walk further, longer distances to be able to collect just the little they need to survive on. So there's also a message of alternative livelihoods, which I've begun to preach in the communities. And then when it comes to the issue of water, you find out that so many of the water sources are drying up in the face of global warming, climate change. Most of these women are not even aware that what is happening has to do with climate change. And then the rains in Nigeria have become so unpredictable. Mm. You know, the women who are mostly farmers, 70% of the farmers you have in Nigeria, I'll say, are women, mm-hmm. if not more. They still are the ones who work on the farms, and now the yields are very low, you know. So that is also affecting their livelihoods, even though that aspect of land ownership is still there, you know. They don't own the land, but they are ready to do the work. Then one of the things I do is teach these women issues around water sanitation and hygiene, because I believe when women are informed, you know, they're able to take action in situations that affect their lives and affect the lives of people in their community. I've been able to create opportunity for over 1,000 women in my community to engage in issues of environmental stewardship, whether it has to do with food security, water security, climate change, which is a very current issue we're trying to fight. So we can see from some of the few examples that I've been able to share that you can't separate women from nature, and then we can't also keep them silent. If the drive for sustainability must be sustained, and you know, if anything meaningful will ever come out of the message of sustainable development which we preach, women must take the lead. Women must be at the forefront of the fight for climate justice.
Hear, hear.
This is powerful. Jampa, let's go to you and let's talk a little bit about how you see girls' education really changing the future of Tibet, right? And share a little bit about your experiences, with education. I think your story is also very powerful.
Well, with Tibet, when you think about Tibet, is that Tibet is a very culturally, historically very rich, and environmentally very beautiful country, the place. So, but we have all these tremendous restrictions and constraints from all this access to the resources and education and information. So I think. And also culturally, the girls are raised in a way that is very confining to certain rules and the cultural beliefs there. So, and I can see that girls my age, girls and my sisters, my cousins, so in my community, they gradually internalize these beliefs. And they also believe that they're supposed to be at home, and they don't have a really space to, you know, express themselves or pursue their dreams. So they have to listen their parents and their relatives, their village, the community, where they're expected. These all expectations that they really live in. So I see the ghosts, they don't live in their life, and I mean their world. So they live in the other's expectation. That is so difficult and very sad. So I think if you educate a girl or a woman, that is the most, I mean, the powerful and the best way to promote or grow a healthy healthy community and families. So I think it's very important to educate and give them opportunities, to give them a vibrant space that they can educate themselves and have their voice heard and expressed in a way that, you know, they can pursue their own dreams. So that is the best way to promote a healthy community, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, all around, yeah. Right?
All around. Exactly.
There is that saying that, you know, you educate a woman, you educate a village, right? Like, mm-hmm.
Yes,
women,
exactly.
We share that.
So, yes. And then there is a saying, it's very interesting in Tibet, my community, mice and the girls cannot go anywhere else. Otherwise, they will be caught by predators.
Ah,
that's why
home
is the most safe and the best place for mm-hmm. girls. So the parents also, they're not willing to send their children, mm-hmm. Their girls, daughters, far away from their home because they have these worries, all mm-hmm. the kind of anxiety. So that's why they don't have much space to, you know, pursue their dreams. Mm-hmm. So this is I'm supposed to be doing. So they just live in a very small community and give birth to a child. They get married and all the circle of house chores every day. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
And here you are actually studying abroad.
Yes.
In Bangladesh, right? So yeah. I just want to thank your family.
Yes,
for
I'm very thankful.
Investing in you and your education.
I'm very lucky and fortunate to having a very supportive family. Even if my parents don't have a very high educational background, my mom is illiterate, mm-hmm. but my dad has a primary education, but they believe in education, mm-hmm. and they took all the hard work and sent me to the school. So, they don't want me to follow the path of theirs because what they are doing every day is, every other day is just in the farm, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of circle, the endless mm-hmm. circle of postures.
Yeah.
So they also have expected me to do some great things to community. They believe in my visions. So mm-hmm. I'm so lucky to have that supportive family.
You're listening to a KBOO special. I'm Delphine Crescenzo and Leanne Kranz. We're both from the Bread and Roses Collective. And this morning, we are bringing you the voices of Inanna Chahuti Champa and Olanike Olukboji. And they are going to be speaking, if you're interested in seeing them live on stage. That's tomorrow night at the World Trade Center in downtown Portland at 7 p.m. We're going to take a short musical break and we'll be right back to this discussion. So stay tuned.
For the love, I do it for for the poet, I do it for the thug. This is for victory, and this is for the slaughter. I do it for my mother, I do it for my daughter. Promise I always love ya, I love to kiss and hug ya. You and your brother should be looking out for one another. I'm so blessed, man, y'all the reason I got up. Somebody put his hands on you, I'm getting locked up. I'm not playing, that's the prayer I'm saying for Diani. And if I die, then she'll be protected by Amani. That's a bigger brother, and I love the way he love her. She a girly girl, she love to imitate her mother. But she a Gemini, so stay on the friendly side. She'll put that look on you, it's like somebody friend just died. My pretty black princess smells sweet like that incense that you buy at the bookstore, supporting black business. Teach her what black is, the fact is a parent of thorough. She four reading cornrows by Camille Yarborough. I keep her hair braided, bought her a black Barbie. I keep her mind free, she ain't no black zombie. This is for Aisha, this is for Kashira, this is for Khadijah, scared to look up in the mirror. I see the picture clearer through the stain on the frame. She got a black girl name, she living black girl pain. This is for my keeper and for my mama Sita. It's really good, ma, I'll be your promise keeper. I see the picture clearer through the stain on the frame. She got a black girl name, she living black girl pain.
Black Girl Pain by Jean Grey and Talib Kweli. That song was selected by one of our guests this morning, Inanna Jahudi. Thank you for that.
I love that song.
You're listening to a special program this morning on KBOO. I'm Leanne Kranz, here with my co-host, Delphine Crescenzo. We are honored to have with us three grassroots women leaders who are here in town for the World Pulse Live event. We have Inanna Jahudi, a maternal health advocate from the Bronx, Olenike Olagboji from Nigeria, who is empowering women to take a leadership role in solving the environmental issues of our world and in her home country of Nigeria, and Jamba from Tibet, a girls' education leader. Each of you mentioned in your worldpulse.com online journal that writing was a passion of yours and was an important component of your advocacy and your getting your message out, your vision. Can you share your thoughts on the importance of self-expression and the power of women sharing their stories to bring about change? Jamba, would you like to begin?
Well, writing is one of the my passion. Just you mentioned, I really like writing, but also it takes a lot of effort, and I can say it kills brain cells. It's really tough to when you start, even especially introduction when you start writing. For me, the most difficult part is the beginning. It's very tough, but when you have a piece of your production, I really like, and so I think it's very very important to express yourself. I think that is the best way to bring about your own inner voice, as well as we help others' voice, unheard voices, to the global stage, especially where the World Pulse is a very powerful platform and a very, I would say, sacred. And you not only educate yourself and have yourself like have a space to express, but you also connect with very courageous, inspirational women across from the world. And I've learned so much in connecting myself with people across from the world, educating myself with a lot, especially, for example, I've learned sexual harassment in the women male dash, and domestic violence that women face in India. the world of breast irony that women undergo in the Cameroon, and how women are oppressed, what to wear, and how to cover themselves in the Sudan. All these issues are not really happening in one place or one country. All these issues are really emotionally contagious, and we all experience the pain. At the same time, we are experiencing this suffering and their pain. At the same time, we all combine, come together, and believe in our values, intrinsic values, and believe that we can change the world for a better place. So I think it's very powerful. The writing is very powerful to bring all of us together to you know, combine our voices, amplify for a better change.
And you can hear more of Jamba's words, her writings, on worldpulse.com under Jampa, J-A-M-P-A. Olenike.
Yeah. I come from a kind of community where, like I said earlier, that women would rather be seen than heard. Mm. And I've always loved writing. And like I always tell people that I'm passionately green. And I've come to realize that what makes me is that greenness. I can't separate myself from that. That is me. And I've had, because of some of the barriers women face when it comes to you getting heard, you know, I found out that writing was a way of expressing myself, you know, telling myself what is important to me. But good enough, the internet provided a platform I could share me with other people out there. And so when I found World Pulse, you know, it was like a platform for me to share me with the world and to share what is important to me with the world. And when I started getting people listen to me, you know, it was very empowering for me, and I wanted to tell more. I started writing more because now I knew that what I stood for was important. And also now, because of how empowering it's been for me, I'm also inspired to support other women in my community, you know, to also tell their stories, share their stories, because like Walpole will say, no one speaks for you, you speak for yourself. So when women cannot speak for themselves in their community, they could express themselves through writing. And I'm telling you that there are people out there who will listen to you.
Mm-hmm. And Olenike's journal can be accessed through worldpulse.com under Green Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Inanna, what about you?
I've been a writer since I can remember, and writing has kept me alive. It was definitely what kept me from taking my life in high school and in various points of my 20s. So self-expression is very important because it taps into your subconscious and it helps you to have a space to write. And through writing and sharing my stories online, it was a way to make other women not feel alone because of how alone I have felt in my life. So through my website, through different various journals, like I've been a blogger for years. As soon as I found Life Journal and all the other different journals, I've been blogging. And so it's just been a way to connect and also let people know, especially women, the power of expressing their ideas and their thoughts, and that, you know, the proverbial pen is mightier than the sword is the truth. And also, there are some people who cannot write. And you can say for them what you feel like they need to say. I've been told a lot, like I could never put that into words. Thank you. And so there's a very healing power of being able to express. Same way you hear a song and you're like, oh my God, yes. Very, very much similar to that.
And Inanna's online journal is at worldpulse.com under Latinegra. And you all can sign up at worldpulse.com and add your voice to the global conversation.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, as we're going to wrap up here, I can't believe it's been an hour that we've been talking. Of course, people can come to see you speak live tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. I'd love if we can end with, you know, some words of inspiration for, you know, girls and women of all ages out there listening who, you know, maybe are inspired to take on grassroots activism or already are grassroots activists. Let's go with you, Olanike.
From what I've said thus far and the reality that we have in the world, I want to say that women, no one is going to hand over leadership to you. You'll take it. You have to rise up and take it.
Wow.
Yes. Word.
Jampa, what do you have to say after this?
Yeah. I just want to say, all women and girls out there, believe in yourself, and each one of you, each one of us has a potential and values. So go forward your dreams and pursue, and there, believe that there are lots of possibilities and opportunities ahead. So go forward.
Yay.
As women, we are in bodies that create, not just children, but many, many things. So I urge any woman who wants to take up love as their arm and create new worlds, create children, create relationships, create the change that you want to see. You have your sisters all over the world who are ready to do this. It's time.
The time is now, people, cable listeners. We are so thankful to have you had you guys in the studio this morning. Thank you to Kathleen Stevenson for letting us hijack the space so we can hear your voices. And I would like to encourage everybody to go tomorrow night to the event at the World Trade Center. That's at 7 p.m. in downtown Portland. It's been our honor to have Inanna Jehudi, Jampa, and Olanike Olukbo, and you can connect with them, read their work on worldpulse.com. And we're going to leave you with a song that actually Olanike picked. It's Peter Gabriel, and that's the song from the film WALL-E, Down to Earth. Have a wonderful morning, everyone.
Your feet had been bound by what gravity brings to the ground. Did you feel you were tricked by the future you picked? Well, come on down. All these rules don't apply when you're high in the sky, so come on. We got snow upon the mountains, we got rivers down below.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Stay tuned, because at 10:15, Flashpoints features peace activists David Swanson, Kathy Kelly, and Malachi Kilbride talking about Obama's bombing of Syria, as the U.S. and Syria become partners in the war against ISIS. At 11 o'clock, we've got the Recovery Zone for you. Today, biologist David George Haskell discusses his book, The Forest Unseen, A Year's Watch in Nature. And at 11:30, we speak with Roberta S. Hunt, Marilyn Keller, and Skeeter Green about My Walk Has Never Been Average, Stories of Black Tradeswomen, a multimedia presentation based on the lives of women whose stories are rarely told. Let's listen to a few announcements, and then we'll get right to Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.
Tune into KBOO on Wednesday, October 1st for Turning the Tide on Climate Change.
An all-day special about climate change and the actions we must take now.
And don't miss a special guest, Naomi Klein, talking about her new book, This Changes Everything. Capitalism versus the Climate at 1 p.m.
That's Turning the Tide on Climate Change on Wednesday, October 1st, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Triangle Productions premiere of Tick, Tick, Boom, a play by Jonathan Larson. Tick, Tick, Boom is a three-chapter pop rock musical about facing crossroads in life and holding on to your dreams that was first produced off-Broadway in 2001. Tick, Tick, Boom plays at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland, from September 4th through the 27th. More information about Tick, Tick, Boom can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, September 24th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.fm,